You are listening to an insightview.eu podcast. In this podcast, InsightView has asked Ole Hansen, head of commodity strategy at Saxo Bank, whether the world faces a new energy crisis, and what caused the latest energy turmoil in Europe and China. In Europe, we have suddenly discovered that no law of nature says that the wind blows, the sun shines, and that Putin supplies us with natural gas when we need it. The editor asks Ole whether the crisis was pre-programmed. InsightView also asks Ole whether the current energy crisis could derail Europe's green transformation.
First, thank you, Ole, for taking part in this podcast. Today, the world faces an energy crisis which many commentators believe has come out of thin air. Isn't the reality that the crisis was pre-programmed due to a series of excessive stimulus measures launched during the pandemic, an incoherent green transformation plan, and not least Chancellor Merkel's abrupt exit from nuclear energy in 2011?
Well, hello, Carsten, and thank you very much for the invitation to join you here. I think you are touching really on some of the key issues that that are the reasons why we are seeing this current steep rise in energy costs around the world. I think there's no doubt that we have seen an overstimulated economy since the pandemic broke out. All the stimulus has been provided both in Asia and in Europe and Asia and the US led to a very, very strong surge in demand for consumer goods. We know that China is still the world's factory, and it's led to a massive surge in electricity usage in China, which requires a lot of gas and coal, and that is really part of the story that China has seen a very big ramp up in demand just basically to meet the production demands coming from around the world. In addition, the climate is also playing its part. We have had a very cold winter last year, which left this year. We enter this year with pretty low stock levels of gas. We have to remember that gas is normally injected into storage during the summertime and then extracted during the wintertime when heating demand is going up. That has left us vulnerable as we moved into the summer period. And we've had some really hot weather in southern Europe. And adding to this, the reliance on renewable has been a challenge because we had Danish Ørsted coming out saying in their latest quarterly update that they experienced one of the worst wind quarters in 22 years. So that's obviously all adding up to the supply shortage we have now. In addition, Russia is our main contributor when it comes to gas. They have fulfilled their long-term contract this summer, but the increased demand that we had in Europe, not only due to weather, but also due to economic activity, has not been met by increased flows from Russia. There's a lot of speculation with regards to that, but it clearly highlights that we are reliant in a high degree on supplies from outside Europe, especially from Russia, to meet demands on the days where the sun isn't shining or the wind isn't blowing.
Okay, well, let's start with the chaotic energy situation in China. Why do we suddenly have an energy crisis in China, which several of my contacts in the country have compared to something that has not been seen since the early 2000s? Is there a connection with China's deteriorated diplomatic relations with Australia, one of China's most important raw material suppliers? Or what is behind this crisis?
Well, at this point, if we just take Australia first of all, Australia is a major supplier of coal and of iron ore. We did see iron ore prices jump above $200 earlier this year when demand was surging. But since then, initiatives in China to combat pollution has led to a sharp drop in iron ore imports, and that has basically left iron ore collapsing. It was below $100 recently, so that is a flow that ebbs and flows. But coal, China cut back on their coal from Australia last year, and that hasn't come back. So for now, they're sourcing coal from other sources. So that's probably not the main, or that is not the reason why we are seeing this surge. in consumption, but also and with that lack of potential risk to supplies. It is, I think most of all, it is the fact that China is still the world's factory, and we've seen this explosion in demand for consumer goods, which has driven up electricity use in China. It has also basically depleted some of their resource or their stock levels of both gas and especially coal, and we have just now over the past couple of months seen increased signs even from official media in China that they are worried about the supplies heading into the winter, and that's led to almost an arms race for gas in the global market, because LNG these days are obviously being sailed around the world, and the two major destinations for LNG is either Europe or Asia. And right now we one of the reasons why prices are continuing to go up is because we are competing with each other to have the highest price, thereby having the best ability to attract these LNG shipments. So that's part of the equation, but also I think the China's ability or willingness or attempt to reduce their carbon footprint, reduce pollution, has led to some of the power plants in coal being asked to close down or at least cut down on their activity. That has led to power outages, which is also leading to slow down in the economic growth. The fact of the matter is just simply right now that the economic growth or that we've seen in over the last year has simply been so strong that the global infrastructure in terms of supplying energy has not been able to keep up.
You mentioned a lot of international competition for energy sources. Today, from where does China get its extra energy?
Well, it's their big neighbor north to the north, Russia and South Africa. And these are actually two of the countries that we in Europe normally get our coal from, the coal that we buy from outside the Union. And that has also led to increased competition for coal into the European market. So not only do we see gas prices rising by what a factor, I think we're now getting close to a factor, at least a factor five above the five-year average in gas, but coal is also at least getting close to three times the price we've been paying throughout the last 5 years on average. So It is when one source becomes impacted, it the competition in from other sources heats up, and that's what we've seen with shipments from both Russia and South Africa.
Has China boosted imports of LNG from the United States?
That is a trend we are likely to see continue. LNG has really only just during the past couple of years been a market where China started to emerge as a major buyer, and it is obviously part of that is the incentive to become less pollutant. They are seeking more gas at the expense of coal, but also just simply because the economy continues to grow, the demand for electricity continues to grow, so they constantly need to import enough raw materials to make sure that they can provide keep the base load going in the electricity grid. So U.S. has emerged as a major exporter of LNG. I think they're now the world's second largest exporter after Qatar. And again, the producers, these plants in the U.S., they obviously will send the LNG to the destination which pays the highest price. So so China is most certainly a force to be reckoned with on top of the already strong demand that we always see from Japan and South Korea.
Ole, when I listen to you, it doesn't really sound like transitory demand. It seems more like structural change in demand in the energy market. Is that correct?
I think that's a fair point, Carsten. And I think also one of the reasons for that is the green transformation, which basically is resulting in the energy mix being somewhat changed. So more and more producers or consumers want gas at the expense of coal, and the market is just simply not big enough to cope with that, especially when we've had such a big jump in economic activity as we've seen over the past year, which has been, as I said early on, where the economy basically looks like it's been overstimulated. And we're currently at a point where the Really, there's only two major factors that can change this outlook, and one of them is not one that we would like, and that's the slowdown in growth, i.e., that a high price is the best cure for high price because it kills demand. When it comes to that, that's another discussion we can have as well. But then we have the whole focus on ESG. Where can investors invest, and what are they allowed to invest in? And it basically means that normally, when you have high prices, you will see demand start to be negatively impacted, while supply is starting to rise because it's become more profitable to increase production. Right now, the supply side is not going to be as responding as quickly, because the investment going into some of these energy producing sectors are not as strong as they have been, because investors are basically want to put their money elsewhere.
Let us talk about the European energy crisis. In Europe, we have suddenly discovered that no law of nature says the wind blows, the sun shines, and that Putin supplies us with natural gas when we need it. What is happening in the European energy market?
Well, I think it's safe to say that we have witnessed almost a perfect storm of events unfolding this year, which has left us in this predicament that we are seeing now. Even before we are heading into, even before the heating or the winter season has started, we are seeing record prices before the season, the winter season start. Normally, this is something that is associated with the months of January and February, when we move into the deep freezer. But having this crisis already now, or crunch already now, is a sign that we have just been left desperately unprepared. We had low stock levels going into the summer, following a very cold winter. We've had hot weather, which has increased demand during the summer. We have not had an expected increase in flow from Russia. Wind has not been blowing as strongly as we've seen in other years. So it has just left us short of base load. And when you have and base load is what is required just to keep the minimum power in the system to keep to avoid blackouts. And what we in the past, the base load across Europe was primarily provided by generators, power generating from nuclear and from coal. We have seen coal plants have been decommissioned over the past decade, and we also saw in Germany that the nuclear power plants after the Fukushima disaster was that Merkel ordered a decommissioning of the power plants, and that's left us in a predicament, because we need that base load to ensure that the days when the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't shining, that we have enough base load in the electrical grid system. That needs to come from gas power turbines or from coal. And with gas obviously in short supply this summer, we have increasingly been turning to coal. And when you turn to coal, you need to pay the pollution tax, which is the emissions contracts. And that basically means that's also adding an extra tax on the price, which ultimately end up somewhere, and that ends up in with you and me as a consumer, and with the industries paying a higher price to keep the wheels running.
Does the current energy crisis in Europe pose a risk to the green transformation?
I don't think so, because the political will to get the transformation or continue to with the transformation is incredibly strong. What we will, or what we could risk during the winter months, is that we would see increased vocal protests across Europe. But again, I don't necessarily think that consumers will link it to the green transformation. They'll just see electricity bills and gas bills punitively high. They'll read headlines which mostly will be focusing on Russia not delivering the gas, so they will probably be be used as the culprit. But it is, at the same time, we cannot avoid not also see that that we have a problem in the sense that the output from from solar and wind is very volatile, and it basically means that it's not a reliable source, or we need to have additional sources of supply when they fail to deliver the power that's generated. And it's also it's actually a problem for some of these generators, because they're not actually making a windfall out of this these incredibly high prices, because the thing is when they all either produce or they don't produce. So when they're all producing and the wind is blowing, they don't get the price that they otherwise would be getting if they had the ability to to store it or in otherwise hold back that power until when the times when it's needed. So I think that's part of the story with the green transformation, that we need first and foremost a more secure base load. I think that base will bring us towards focusing again on nuclear reactors, atomic energy, and also the ability to store electricity over a period of time. That these are I think fundamental requirements in order to make sure that we are not completely reliant on supplies from outside of the European Union and especially from Russia.
You already touched on it, but I bet I have to ask you again. Do you believe that European voters' support for the green transformation will increase, seen in the context of the current mess in the European energy market, considering that a part of the green transformation includes higher carbon emission taxes, as you already mentioned?
Well, I think there is a risk in the short term that we will see some resistance, because up until now, obviously we all want a carbon reduced atmosphere. We want to make sure that there's a life for our children, our grandchildren, and so that makes perfect sense that we need to ensure that we leave the world in a better position than it is right now. But everything comes at a cost, and if you as a consumer sees your gas and electricity bills going through the roof, if you see economic activity start to slow, if you see unemployment start to rise because the more and more a higher percentage of your take-home pay it cannot go towards consumer goods and what else keeps the wheels running, it instead has to be used to be paid for things that you cannot live without. So energy, gas, electricity, gasoline for your car, and so on. That's when we might have a challenge. There's already now been Spain and France. We are already now seeing protests against these. We saw the yellow vest a few years ago in France, and if we don't get the situation under control into the ahead of the winter, then we potentially could experience a winter of discontent. But what I think it might just smarten up maybe the way we look at the whole transformation, just in the realization that we need more horses to play on, and with that again, I cannot avoid thinking about the prospect for newer technologies being found. So obviously, the push to in that direction will be immense, but also in the medium to also to the longer term, that we have to rely on more reliable source of energy, and again, nuclear is one of them.
The green transformation requires investments and those significant demand for non-energy commodities such as iron ore and copper. Also, the transformation still requires fossil fuels. Has Europe been too ambitious and perhaps a little bit too naive about what the green transformation requires?
I think what probably has caught us a little bit by surprise, which should not really be a surprise, is the fact that as the demand for certain commodities rise, as the green transformation gathers pace, and as we have a very, very stimulated economy, then the competition for raw materials will heat up as well. So it does mean that the green transformation, just compared to a couple of years ago, is going to be so much more expensive because, and again, that's part of the really what is slightly confusing to people, is that from an investment perspective, investors, they are already 10, 15 years ahead. They want to be invested in green. They want to be ESG compliant. But at the same time, in order to get on that journey and get to our destination, that journey requires a lot of input from raw materials. There's a reason why there's an increased talk about so-called green metals. Metals are anything but green, but they are required in this transition. And there's a lot of these metals involved. You mentioned copper, aluminium, because of the whole electrical grid, not only the electrical vehicles, but we need to expand the electrical grid in order to make sure that there's electricity available to charge your cars wherever you are. We've got aluminium, which is lightweight metal. We've got nickel, which goes into batteries. We've got lithium, cobalt, rare earth minerals. We've got something like silver and platinum. So a lot of different metals, all being required in increased quantities in order to cope with this transition. And the problem is obviously if we from an investment perspective or from a bank lending perspective can't touch these mining companies or can't touch these energy producing companies, then prices really basically need to go to levels which makes it affordable for them to take these long term decisions, because mining operations doesn't come and go. It quite often it can take several years before a new mine is ready to produce, and then obviously you want to make sure that you can actually produce for the coming decades. Otherwise, you don't make these long term decisions, and that's really where we are. That's really where we're finding ourselves, and that's also why we some have phrased this the revenge of the old economy, because we have spent the last 10 years focusing on electronics, focusing on the digital transformation, but we have to remember that everything comes from whatever appliances we look at or whatever we use, there's a raw material behind it, and the investment into raw materials has been mining has been reduced sharply in recent years. We have come out of a near decade of plenty of supply, which is and low prices. But now that we are seeing this renewed surge in commodity prices, the industry is simply are not coping in or the reaction function is not as it used to be. I.e. the high price is a cure for high price, because it incentivizes increased production. That part is missing, and that's why we think that inflation is not transitory. It's going to stick around for a while. It's going to be input costs continue to be elevated, and that's why we are somewhat cautious also just at the general level of the stock market, because we are going to see company earnings start to disappoint. We're going to see their forward projections being lowered, not only due to higher raw material prices, but also just the whole congestion we have in the transportation system, freight rates, trading factor 6, 7, 8 above normal averages. So not any prospect for that to improve anytime soon. So it is part of the whole inflation for longer, and whatever the impact. But that's more for a macro guy to look into. But how that will impact economic growth, stock market valuations, and bond yields and real yields and associated commodities over the coming years.
You mentioned the word transitory a couple of times in the same context. Today, the heads of the ECB and the US Federal Reserve continue to talk about transitory inflation, although they find it difficult to disguise that they do have second thoughts about this issue. In the same context, why should commodity producers boost capacity and investments to meet the current demand boom that is set by central banks to be transitory?
Well, that's part of the problem we currently face, and I've seen the comments from central banks as well, and they're basically using supply chain disruptions as the main reason why prices are high, and I think that is really then you're in dreamland if you only focus on supply chain disruption, because you are the demand for raw materials have been rising and it's not a supply chain disruption that's forcing energy prices in Europe up by a factor 5 in a relatively short time before demand actually accelerates into the winter. So I think it boils down to an overstimulated economy driving up production, driving up consumption of energy. It's a global, climate change or whatever you'll call it, but most certainly a more volatile weather scenario, making it more difficult to produce in certain regions. Disruptions, obviously, after as we went through the pandemic, but most of these disruptions, I would say, have eased already. So yes, supply chains will eventually normalize, but I don't think that at the same time will lead to a collapse back in raw materials, because we see the agricultural space prices are generally up by more than 30% year on year. We're heading into a very potential volatile South American season now, especially with focus on Brazil. And the inventory levels has come down, so that sector is likely to remain supported. Metal sector supported by the green transformation focus, and energy scarcity of supply, or investors not or producers not willing to increase production, given what they given the foundation that they work on right now. So so really the only thing that really can cure this is a sharp slowdown in the global growth, and that's obviously not something we want. But at the same time, we had to realize that this phenomenal growth we've seen in the past year, and the phenomenal rises we've seen across assets, everyone suddenly feeling rich, at least if they own stocks or bricks and mortar, that is just that is not a sustainable situation. So so it's going to be interesting to see over the following months, coming months. But I remain firmly in the skeptical camp when it comes to central banks and their ability to predict inflation.
Ole, my last question. What is your storyboard for commodity prices in the coming 12 months?
Well, I think the trend we have seen start from the pandemic low last March, April in 2020, that will continue. We are seeing some of the major indices, an example being the Bloomberg Commodity Index, trading near the highest level in 10 years. That's an index that doesn't even include coal, power, and gas prices. So so commodities are in general quite a bit higher than what these indices are telling us that they should be. So with the prospect for a winter of not discontent, but a winter of still strong demand for energy, we will see a substitution from gas and coal into oil. That will keep oil prices supported. OPEC Plus probably hasn't got the ammunition to be able to meet that additional increase in demand. U.S. shale oil producers are not really in any hurry to increase production at this moment in time. So oil prices will be elevated. Gas prices likely to be elevated, potentially just setting, hopefully not at these levels for too long. But obviously we need to get through the winter before we can see what lies on the other side. And then we got the metal space as well, where we have to remember that it's not only a question of demand, it's also supply. And China, remember, they're holding the Winter Olympics in early 2022. They need clear blue skies for that event, and that basically means that's one of the reasons why as well they're cutting back on pollution. But by cutting back pollution, they're also cutting back production of some of these very polluting metals to reduce, which is aluminium, nickel, and steel. And if demand elsewhere outside China is still strong for these three metals, well, someone else needs to produce them, and that probably comes at a higher price. So, so generally, we remain bullish on commodities for the foreseeable future. Whether it's a 10-year super cycle, as some has talked about, that's probably a little bit too bullish. But I think the trend we're seeing now is likely to stay with us for the foreseeable future.
Thank you, Ole, for taking part in this podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.